We're back, everybody. Welcome to Volunteer Voices, the official podcast of the American Association for Museum Volunteers. It's February 2018, and a few months have gone by as Anna and I both have transitioned in our jobs, but we're excited to be back with the AAMV podcast and be bringing you an interview that we recorded recently with Elisa Kazarin, who is really just a wonderfully smart person. She helps nonprofits deliver fully on their mission and raise more money by strengthening their volunteer programs. With over 20 years of experience in the nonprofit sector, Elisa's work is driven by the underlying belief that volunteers have the potential to transform communities if they commit to nurturing the volunteer-nonprofit relationship and developing high-impact volunteer programs. Elisa consults, coaches, and trains nonprofit staff on volunteer management best practices. She has presented at multiple conferences, including the 2017 National Summit on Volunteer Engagement Leadership. She's a certified volunteer administration and blogs regularly for the Volunteer Match Engaging Volunteers website. We just had such a great conversation with Elisa, and she talked about behavior-based interviewing. And we're really excited to build a relationship with her and have her speak more regularly to the AAMV community about her work training volunteer managers. We're planning a future call where we talk about leadership skills. And I really encourage everybody to go check her out at 20hats.com. That's 20hats.com. So check out Elisa online and hope you enjoy our conversation with her. And we'll be back to normal programming very soon. Elisa, tell us who you are, what you do, how you got to what you do. Tell us everything we need to know about you.
Okay, terrific. Well, I'm Elisa Kazarin, and I would call myself a volunteer engagement specialist. I provide all kinds of services to volunteer managers and nonprofits to help them strengthen their volunteer program. I do a lot of training with volunteer managers. Some of that is around what I would call soft skills, meaning especially the leadership skills that help us progress in our job. And for example, I run here in Northern Virginia, where I live, what I call a volunteer manager's leadership circle, with a group of volunteer managers who meet every other month, and they share and brainstorm and support one another with ideas. And we also cover leadership-related topics, things like moving out of your comfort zone, how to negotiate, and so forth. So that's one piece of what I do. I also train around, you know, what I would call the traditional hard skills, things like recruiting volunteers or training volunteers. And my absolute favorite hard skill to train on is what I call behavior-based interviewing, which is a particular interviewing technique that's especially successful when you're trying to bring in highly skilled, highly specialized volunteers into your organization who need to make a longer-term commitment. And that all comes out of my background. Prior to starting my business, I was the associate director of a court-appointed special advocates program, a CASA program, if you're familiar with. That particular nonprofit, CASA volunteers, are highly specialized volunteers who advocate for abused children in the court system. And so their job is to collect information on a particular case of abuse and neglect regarding how the child is doing in court. And then they need to write up a court report and submit that to the juvenile judge with some recommendations on what needs to happen for the best interest of the child. So as you can imagine, that's a very, very specialized kind of volunteer role. And I actually learned behavior-based interviewing and mastered that as part of my experience with the CASA program, because we were actually having some trouble holding on to quality volunteers and volunteers who would stay with the program and not drop their cases. And that all kind of turned around when we learned this particular interviewing method. So that's another one of the services that I really enjoy offering. Wow.
So can I ask you just like a brief, like what, you know, in a couple sentences, what we describe behavior-based interviewing?
Behavior-based interviewing is it's a way of formulating questions so that you elicit responses that
going to most likely demonstrate whether the candidate who wants to volunteer for your program is going to be a good fit or not. And the basic premise is that you don't go with your gut. And I know many of us feel like, especially if we're very experienced in our work and we've been working with volunteers for a long time, that our gut instincts are good. However, they can lead us astray, especially if we like a particular volunteer a lot, or on the other side of the spectrum, if for some reason we have an aversion to a particular person who may end up being a good volunteer. What behavior-based interviewing does is it takes out all of the hypothetical questions out of the interview, and instead it replaces them with questions that are all geared at eliciting examples of past behavior. So the basic sort of motto for behavior-based interviewing is that past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior. So the basic concept is very simple. Learning how to come up with those questions, however, takes a little bit of practice, which is why I've started to offer trainings around it so that volunteer managers have a space where they can not just learn about the process, but they can also actually practice creating those questions. And when one reason I'm such a big fan of behavior-based interviewing is because when I was at my CASA program, we saw a really dramatic turnaround in our dropout numbers for volunteers and our retention of volunteers. For example, the year that we started this method, we had, of the new volunteers that we took in and trained, 21% of them never even took a case, and 4% of them ended up dropping their cases, which means in that year before we started this method, an entire quarter of the volunteers who were training never even worked out, which is a pretty high number. 2 years later, after we started employing this method, the number of volunteers that we trained who never took a case dropped down to 2%, which was basically one person. And the number of volunteers who were new and never even took a case was also 2%, one person. So we experienced really, 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 I said that many times, dramatic. We had a really dramatic experience using this method. And then our retention over the same time period of our volunteers who were staying 5 years or longer increased from 29% to 48%.
Wow. So,
wow.
So if
is that only related to the only thing you changed at that point was, you know, the interview questions you were asking and the style you were using?
Yeah, that's a good question. That was the primary thing we changed. However, that was not the only thing we changed. We also changed our process for making decisions. In the past, the decisions were made by our program manager. So, for example, a supervisor on our staff would interview a volunteer candidate, write up their impressions, and submit them to the program manager, and the program manager would make that decision. And instead, we moved to a team process where the entire staff, and it was a small staff, so this was not a cumbersome process, but the entire staff would get together and review all of the candidates who had been interviewed over the past week or month and make decisions as a team about who was most likely to be successful and who was probably not a good fit. And that was a really important move as well, because we were able to sort of call each other out when we were making a decision that wasn't likely to work. So if we saw a candidate, for example, who resembled a volunteer in the past who did not work out and had a number of the same, demonstrating that maybe they were not competent in the same kinds of areas or did not demonstrate the same, you know, high level of maturity, and someone on the team could say, hey, this candidate reminds us of that person who we brought in a couple of years ago who didn't work out. This person sounds unlikely to work out. Well, it could work the, you know, the reverse way as well. Someone could bring up a candidate, sort of be in the gray zone about that candidate, still unsure about whether they're going to work or not. And someone may say, you know, this person reminds me of a volunteer that I'm supervising now, and that person has turned out to be very coachable. It looks like from the responses that I'm getting, that I see from your behavior-based interview, that this person
could probably be brought along. So it really changed our decision-making process about who to bring into the program. And we also added a scored rating sheet. So for each of these questions, the responses were rated 1, 2, or 3. You know, whether they were demonstrating competency, not demonstrating competency, or somewhere in the middle. And we came to realize that those scores were actually pretty reliable when it came to determining who was going to be a good fit for the program. So, you know, a high score, something above 80%, was probably going to be a great candidate. And then there was a range in the middle that might work out or might not. And then someone with a low score was pretty clearly not a good fit.
So, Alisa, for our museum volunteer manager colleagues, if they are considering adopting behavior-based interviewing, what do they need to know about sort of the steps and processes that you go through and that sort of would need to, that would be involved in order to implement this?
Yeah, good question. There are some very simple steps. The basic process, as I mentioned, is pretty straightforward. The first step is to take a look at your job description and take a look at your current interview questions and figure out whether the questions that you are interviewing for actually match up with the competencies you need in a volunteer. Sounds like a really simple process. It's something we tend to leapfrog over, especially when we are very, very familiar with the volunteer role. But it's a really good exercise to go through the job description and get super clear about which competencies you actually need in your volunteers. Then you create questions that are going to elicit examples from the person you're interviewing that would show whether they actually possess that competency or not. So, for example, I would say a number one competency for just about any volunteer you interview for is reliability, for example. So when you actually compose a behavior-based question, it's going to start off in one or two ways. You're either going to say, tell me about a time when, and you fill in the blank, or give me an example of. And so for reliability, for example, you might say, and it's always good to preface these questions as well and give them some context. You might say, it's really important for the docents in our museum to stick with their schedules because we have tour groups that rely on them being there. Tell me about a time when you had a commitment that absolutely required your presence and you had to make sure you were there even though it was inconvenient for you. And then you ask for examples, and if they're able to give you examples, then that's a really great sign. If they have to struggle a little bit to come up with an example, that might still be okay. Some people just need more time to think over questions. And if they really can't give you an example, that's a red flag that maybe they don't possess that competency that you need in reliability. So that's the basic process. You just keep asking for an example. I'm trying to think of another good question that you might want to ask. One thing that's great about behavior-based interviewing is that it's really good for getting at what I would call EQ, you know, the emotional intelligence side of volunteering. It's really good at getting at those interpersonal skills that you need on the job. So, for example, last November, I did a training on behavior-based interviewing for volunteer coordinators at the Smithsonian, and many of them mentioned that their tour guides and docents needed to be very sensitive to the content of the various exhibits because sometimes the exhibits could trigger emotional responses or they might cover content that was sort of politically charged in nature. And they needed to be prepared for the responses that they might get from the group. And they also needed to be able to explain the material in a way that was very diplomatic. So we spent a lot of time in our workshop coming up with questions that would get at those kinds of competencies. Like, tell me about a time when you were speaking with someone who suddenly became offended by something you said, even though your intention was not to offend. How did you manage that situation? And then you look for examples of that. And again, if they can give you some examples, that's a really great sign. And if they're having trouble giving you examples,
Well, if they give you an example that really is not satisfactory to you, then you know that maybe this person has some maturity issues that you need to look at.
Good point. Do you encourage people to call references at all? Is there another way to kind of gauge past behavior?
Yeah, another good question. I do. Again, I would frame those references in a behavioral-based manner. So when you're calling a reference, you can ask them the same kinds of questions. Please give me an example of a time when Mr. Smith was on time, even though he had a number of deadlines getting in the way, something like that. Same thing, you're going after the same competencies, and you're asking questions of the references that are very similar, so they can give you examples of how this individual behaved within a certain context.
Makes perfect sense. Do you find that it increases the interview time, or is it about the same?
Yes, it does increase the interview time. I'm glad you brought that up. That is a heads up. It's going to be a longer interview. It's also, but it's going to be a much, much more valuable interview because you're going to get information that you would not otherwise have had.
It sounds like if you invest the time now, you don't have to worry about investing even more time later if you hire the wrong person.
Right, exactly. You know, our goal was really to cut down on, number one, having to let volunteers go because they didn't work out, which is all, as you know, always a very painful process. And number two, making sure that the volunteers we had were really going to fulfill their duties as well as possible. Because in our particular program, and it's probably not much different from the museum program, the reputation was really important. We represented the juvenile court, and we worked with the child welfare system, and we had to make sure that those relationships were always maintained and there was a lot of respect for our program. And that meant that we had to bring in volunteers who were very credible and were not going to cross boundaries or do something that would really upset the apple cart.
Makes perfect sense.
I'm wondering, Elisa, when you did that workshop with the Smithsonian, what similarities and differences were you sort of seeing and observing and hearing compared to your work with non-museum volunteer managers?
Good question. Well, I think the example I gave of being able to identify dozens of tour guides who could manage the emotionally charged or potentially emotionally charged nature of some of the exhibits was new to me. And that seemed like a very specific kind of concern that was shared by the volunteer managers. Some of the Smithsonian museums were also looking for volunteers within a particular group. For example, the Native American Museum here at the Smithsonian would love to bring in more volunteers with a Native American heritage. And so they wanted to come up with a lot of questions around cultural competency and cultural sensitivity. And so we spent some time working on that.
Neat. Stepping back even a little bit further, one of the issues that Anna and I keep hearing and thinking about and talking about is trying to make volunteer corps and volunteer programs more diverse. And I wonder, in your work, what have you encountered regarding making volunteer programs more diverse, and if you have any best practices and what your experiences and conversations have been in that regard?
Yeah, when it comes to diversity, to me that's less of an interviewing issue than a recruitment and marketing and messaging question. And it really comes down to making a commitment as an organization to diversify and then coming up with a plan to do that. I'll use my experience at CASA again as an example. We needed to diversify and bring in a great many more Spanish-speaking volunteers to reflect the population of the children on the cases. And we were fortunate enough to receive a grant from the National CASA Association so that we could begin
to recruit more Spanish-speaking volunteers. We really needed to make a long-term commitment to that initiative to start to see the fruits of it pay off. So we had to come up with a plan and figure out what kind of outreach we were going to do, what kind of messaging we needed. We needed to learn a lot more about the Spanish-speaking populations in our area and how they use volunteering, so that when we're describing our volunteer role, we're describing it in a language that makes sense to them. So to me, diversity, which is always an important issue, is really more at the front end. And by the time you're interviewing, you've reached a different, very different point in the process.
So if somebody wanted to start, you know, dipping their toe into the waters of behavior-based interviewing, how would you suggest they start? Are there resources? I mean, I know that you offer seminars. Are there resources they could also be looking at as well? Or?
Yeah, there are some. I do a lot of blogging. I have been blogging on a weekly basis. I just shifted to a monthly basis. But if you go to my website, which is 20hats.com, both words spelled out, .com, and type in behavior-based interviewing, I have a couple of blog posts that walk you through the basics. So that's always a great way to start. If some of your members are subscribers to Energize Inc.'s e-volunteerism journal, I wrote a much longer article on behavior-based interviewing that was published there a few years ago. And if you'd really like to get your hands dirty and be able to ask me questions on the spot as you're learning this process, I do have a webinar coming up on Tuesday, March 13th, and I'm going to walk participants through this process, and then they'll have some opportunity to play around with questions during the webinar, and I can give you feedback right there on the spot. And again, if you go to my website and go to the events page, you'll find a link to that webinar. Look awesome.
That is awesome. Well, Alisa, this is really fun to talk to you. And as we go through with our podcasts and throughout the year, maybe we'll have you back, and this can be a recurring topic for us, because I think one of the areas of volunteer management that often isn't talked about is the interview process. I think sometimes that gets short shrift as people spend a lot of energy thinking about recruitment and then sort of get so excited that they have new volunteers that they onboard them without sort of thinking about that crucial step. So maybe maybe later in the year, if you're okay with it, we'll come back to you, and after that webinar we can do a follow-up as well.
Yeah, sure, of course. I would be happy to do that. And, you know, you're absolutely right. There is a relationship between recruiting and interviewing, because with this method, more chances are that you're going to be turning away more volunteers than you used to, and that might mean that you need to expand your net when it comes to recruitment. So there definitely is a connection, and I'd be happy to talk about that some more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to hear also more about the leadership skills as well. So I think we have plenty more to talk about in the coming months and so on.
Okay, sounds good.
Good deal. Well, thank you so much. So we hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Alisa Kasarin, and she's at 20hats.com. And stay tuned for a new newsletter from AAMV. And also, if you haven't already, start planning your trip to Phoenix, Arizona for the American Alliance of Museums annual conference in May. AAMV is hosting a number of sessions. We have our networking lunch. We'll be doing happy hours and all sorts of get-togethers, and just creating ways for volunteer managers to meet and to share ideas and best practices. And we'll look forward to seeing you then. And we'll also have more information about specifics and details in the coming weeks and months. Thank you so much for your continued support of the American Association for Museum Volunteers. And until next time, when Anna and I will be back together, we'll talk to you then.